Coach, you know who your opponent is. What did you spend the weekend doing? You watch the games? You sit at home? Who do you watch the games with? What is that experience like in your life?
I definitely watched the Indianapolis Kansas City game. That was quite a game. Started working on Kansas City halfway through the game, then switched back to Indianapolis. But it was a tremendous football game. Of course, I think Indianapolis showed a lot of mental toughness and just resiliency to have that kind of deficit and then come back and make all the plays they needed to make at the end of the game on offense, defense, special teams. I mean, they've done it before. They've come from behind before, but that was a tremendous comeback in that situation. So it was a very impressive win.
I imagine if you go to a concert with a musician, they see it differently or hear it differently than the rest of us. Or if you go to a film with a filmmaker, they're dissecting things and pointing out things that nobody else sees. Watching a football game with the football coach, are you able to relax and watch it, or are you coaching throughout and making mental notes as you watch these games?
No, I think I'm just more looking for the results. It's hard to do TV scouting. You just can't see enough of the game. And we certainly have plenty of time once the film comes in by Sunday morning to go through it with a fine-tooth comb and, you know, look at each play and run it back and all that. When the game's going on, you just kind of, you know, watch the substitutions, watch the situation, just, you know, get the flow of the game, just like anybody else that's watching.
Put the announcers on mute.
Well, sometimes they have a lot of good insight. Sometimes they talk about what the coaches have told them or a player's told them about how they're gonna play the game or certain keys or substitutions, injuries. There are a lot of injuries in that game. You know, they had some updates on those. So, you know, all those things are interesting to keep up on, but the real, really getting into it and digging is, you know, it starts the following morning when you have the coach's film to look at.
So do you get to watch the games on Sunday too? I mean, will you sit and actually just watch all four games, or by the time Sunday comes around, were you just fully engrossed in preparing for, I guess at that point you still didn't know, right? Because you had to find out whether or not Cincinnati would win.
Right. Well, I mean, I don't really have, you know, that big of an interest in the NFC games. I mean, that doesn't impact us, but certainly the Cincinnati game did, and so, you know, we worked on Indianapolis and had planned on working on Indianapolis until, you know, it looked like Cincinnati would win, and then it would be Cincinnati, but that never really happened, so we kind of just stayed on Indianapolis all day Sunday, and we're on them now. So we had to wait to see how that game played out, but we jumped in on Indianapolis as soon as Indianapolis won, because that was the, you know, the next team.
You didn't see too much of the freezing cold in Green Bay?
No, not much. I saw a little bit of the ending there. I mean, that was another, you know, great finish with, you know, two teams that were really, really playing hard. And Green Bay came back, and then they, what did they do, tied up, and then, San Francisco held them to the field goal. They tied it up, and then San Francisco had a great drive there at the end, converted a couple third downs, and kicked the winning field goal. So that was another great game.
There's so much stuff in that Indianapolis game to talk about and debate forever. I mean, really, I saw you quoted as saying you could feel it coming. You know, they were up 38-10. You could feel them starting to make a comeback. At what point did you say, oh, this thing's not over yet? You know, Indianapolis has momentum. Was there a particular play that got your attention?
Well, I think they cut it to 10 points by the start of the fourth quarter. Then Kansas City kicked a field goal, and so it was a 13-point game. It was never really, or them make it a 6-point game when they kicked a field goal. But it seemed like once they got it to 10 points, 2-score game with a quarter to go, that, you know, that was enough time. Certainly they were going to get two more possessions if they could stop Cincinnati and hold them to the field goal. When it went from 10 to 13, didn't seem like that, you know, big of a deal, because those 3 points were, as well as Indianapolis playing in the red area, they were able to get it in, and eventually, you know, they were, I don't want to say meaningless points, but they weren't a big factor.
You know, it's amazing, but we were talking about this, Mike, before Bill came in. Just that we've all heard how close and competitive the league is. We know it is. I mean, the games outside of the Cincinnati game, all the games were very close. But even in that Indianapolis game, you tell your team about details and paying attention to all the little things and being prepared. In this game, what does it come down to? not only a game decided by a point, but the final play of the game for Kansas City's perspective. Receiver catches the ball. He's on the sideline, and they probably, what's it, 3 inches, 2 or 3 inches?
All right.
And that's how they lose him. And do you...
Well, then the intentional grounding. I mean, that was a big call, you know, that put him in fourth, well, third and long, whatever it was.
Yeah, and they complete the
pass. Because they had a chance to, you know, looked like he kind of had a chance to throw it away. Then he went back and looked back to his right and then threw it out of bounds and got the intentional grounding call. So, you know, that was another huge play right there at the end that I don't want to say it could have gone either way, but, it was a big call.
These games seem to shift sometimes when a team gets up big. Michael and I spent a while talking about it earlier. Not that we see a lot of 28-point comebacks, but we saw your team come back from some deficits this year. We've seen other teams in the NFL. How do games change from a coaching perspective when either you find yourself up by 14, 21, 25 points, or down by the same score?
Well, I mean, I don't think they change fundamentally, but, I mean, there's definitely a element of human nature, you know, when you have a lead to maybe not press quite as hard as you would when you were doing it to get the lead, you know, whether that's on the tennis court, on the golf course, you know, playing, whatever. It's sometimes there's a little bit of a you know, human nature just to ease off the gas a little bit. And, well, you sure can't do it in this league. We've seen it time and again. There are many examples.
When did you, when was that lesson driven home to you? I mean, you've been in this league since you graduated from college. I don't know if it was something you just got at the age of 23, 24, or did something happen in a game where you said, all right, well, I learned my lesson there. There's even if we're up by 28 in the third quarter, this game's not over. When did that become clear to you as a coach?
Oh, I think I learned that long before then. You know, grew up a coaching family, watched a lot of games, saw a lot of games with my dad. And I can remember going to even watch games that he was scouting, and the game was, you know, the winner was declared, but the game wasn't over. And, you know, he charted those plays just as if the game was riding on him, you know, because it was just part of the game. You know, you keep working the game. You never really stop doing it until the final whistle blows. So I think it's always just been just bred in me, I guess would be the best way to put it.
Andrew Luck won a couple of playoff games in his first 2 years in the league. What has allowed him to have such success early in his career?
Well, he can do a lot of things as a player. I mean, he's obviously got a great ability to throw the ball and see the field. He's very good vision, does a good job on the touch plays, can get the ball down the field. He's very poised under pressure and does a good job, moving in the pocket and also moving out of the pocket. He's run for some key first downs. And he's also been able to buy time with his legs and be able to find scramble plays or loose plays after the initial plays kind of been run. Then, you know, he can improvise and make things happen. So he's very, very tough guy to defend. He can do a lot of things to beat you. You got to be good at all of them.
You know, when they came here last year, that was a pretty interesting game at the beginning. It looked like it was going to be a shootout in the first two possessions. They have touchdowns. You guys come back, and then the game got out of hand. You wind up with 59 points against them. Well, the two questions. One, is there any carryover? Is there anything you can use from that game? A slightly different personnel.
Yeah, not much. I'd say not much. Not a lot. I mean, offensively, this is definitely not Bruce Arians' offense. This is a different offense. You know, with the pep runs and defensively. I mean, Chuck wasn't really there, and so I think that there's some differences there. Certainly, they've added some players like Landry, like Toller, and so that's a factor too. And there's a new special teams coach, and so and that's quite a bit different. So, two of the three coordinators are new. The head coach, I don't want to say he's new, but wasn't at the game, and he's on the defensive side of the ball. So I think there's some different elements there. As well as some of the players and some of the matchups. Obviously Gronkowski was a big factor in that game. He won't be in this one, so and so forth and so on. So there's a lot of things that are different.
And he's a rookie in that game now in his second year. Is it just over the top obvious how different he is now compared to how he was in that game? I mean, do you look at him on film and say, oh, man, he wasn't capable of doing that last year or making that check or making that call?
Yeah, I think that there's been a lot of development in Luck's game, but I would say offensively as an entire group, not just him, but the entire offensive team. They're a more experienced team. They do things at a higher level, make fewer mistakes, and, you know, just a little more sophisticated than what they were a year ago. When I think that has a lot to do with, you know, the experience of a lot of guys. I mean, like Hilton, like Luck. I mean, you can just go right down the line. That they've just been together longer. They're more experienced. They're more savvy, and they execute better.
Yeah, he cut his interceptions in half, right? When 18 a year ago, he only had 9 interceptions this year. And you bring up T.Y. Hilton. Clearly, there is a chemistry, a something, a bond that has developed between the two of them over 200 yards yesterday. T.Y. Hilton's emerged. How does a wide receiver like him come out of nowhere? And it seems like that position has a lot of these guys that where the guys drafted in the first and second round don't always live up to expectations. The guys drafted late in later rounds drastically exceed those expectations. And I know that can happen in any position, but it seems to be exaggerated at the wide receiver spot.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say he came out of nowhere. I think everybody knew about him coming out of Florida International, right? And, you know, the issue with him, the two issues with him were, you know, one, he's not a big guy. I mean, his size is you know, not great. But he was also injured after his senior year. So what you saw on film in college and what you saw in a spring workout didn't really match up because he just wasn't 100%. And I think that was the concern of just, well, you know, At the level of competition he was playing against, I mean, yeah, he was an outstanding player. He made a lot of plays in the passing game, made a lot of plays on reverses, made a lot of plays on returns, but it wasn't playing against, you know, elite competition. And then when you saw him work out, you didn't see that workout that just blew you away, and he wasn't 100%. And, you know, clearly what you're seeing now is what it looked like in college, and he's healthy. So I wouldn't say it came out of nowhere. I think there was some circumstances around that. And so I think probably the league, you know, many people in the league had a little bit of that reservation of, you know, how high are we going to take a guy that we just can't see the speed, the quickness, the explosiveness that we saw on film. But what we saw on film wasn't against, you know, elite competition. So
do you think he's faster, quicker, more explosive now, or is he heady enough, or is there some other quality about him that has allowed him to succeed the way he has?
No, I think what you see now is what you saw on college tape. I think that, you know, as a college player, there wasn't any doubt about his playmaking ability. I think the question was the level that he played at, you know, and the competition he played against. He was a lot better than those guys, you know, would that carry over to the next level? And had he gone out and run, you know, 4-4 times and, you know, 3-7 shuttles and all those kind of things, then you would say, okay, yeah, we see it. But he just wasn't able to do that. And then that put a little bit of probably the guesswork into just, well, what, you know, how really athletic, what kind of athletic explosive numbers does he really have? And you had to kind of guesstimate, well, if he was 100% healthy, you know, this is what it would be. And I think we see what they are now because he's done it many times to a lot of different teams, to a lot of different people. So he's legit.
You said something last week at one of your press conferences that I found very interesting, talking about how football is unlike baseball, basketball in terms of the playoffs. It's not 2 out of 3. It's not 4 out of 7. This is, you got one game, you got one shot. If you can look at it, I know the league is very competitive. Any team can win on any day. If you look at it, is there any pattern you see to teams that, like yours, and there are other teams that consistently have done a good job over the years of winning at least a playoff game or a couple of playoff games in this one-and-done system? Is it a mentality? Is it something, if you look back, is there one thing in common? Is it forcing turnovers? I mean, if you had to boil it down, could you boil it down to this is what happened is when?
Well, I think it starts with having a good team. I think that's the number one thing, and I think that's a lot more important than home field advantage or bye weeks or any of that other stuff. I mean, if you have a good team and you play good, it doesn't matter where you play or if you have to play an extra game. I think we've all seen that. So, you know, it's really about being able to perform well at this time of year. And you look at a team like San Diego, regardless of what their record is, regardless of how they got to wherever they got to, it looks like they're playing very well. And that's not a bad place to be. And we've seen that before from other teams, other, you know, like the Giants, like the Ravens, that, you know, were wild card teams that, that went on and, you know, won a lot of games, won championships. So I don't think that's – I don't think the seeding is nearly as important as the way the team's performing. And sometimes your team just hits their absolute peak at this time of year, and sometimes it doesn't. And we always try to do everything we can to be the best that we can be in January, or, you know, December and January. And that's – sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't, but that's always, you know, the goal is to – be playing our best football at this time of year, and this is when we need it the most, and that's our objective, and so that's what we're going to try to do is get our absolute top game this Saturday night and go from there.
I know we spent a while talking to you about special teams last week, and then I think it was in your Wednesday or Friday press conference, you talked more about the extra point system and how it's become more automatic than maybe it was originally supposed to be. What would you do? I mean, if you were the commissioner for a day, what would be your system for extra points?
Well, I don't know. I think that's a conversation for, you know, some other time. Right now, I'm just trying to see if I can do the best I can to get our team ready to play the Colts, and we know what we have to work with, so we'll try to do the best we can on that. And whatever happens after the season on other things like rules and changes and suggestions and all that, we'll deal with it then.
Don't ask me what I'd do if I were commissioner for a day. Anyway, it's time now for the coach's question of the week. This week's question is from Dave in Boston. First, Dave says, thank you for such a great foundation, which you launched right around the holidays, I believe.
Thanks, Dave.
He wants to know how you became such a big fan of lacrosse and if there's any connection with the skill set in lacrosse to the skill set in football.
Well, you know, when you grow up in Maryland, you learn lacrosse, and lacrosse was the bigger sport over baseball in the spring. So you go down to Maryland, you don't see kids on baseball diamonds. I mean, you see a few, but you see them on lacrosse fields on Saturday mornings from the time they can, you know, walk and chew gum at 5, 6, 7 years old. They're out there playing. So, you know, you kind of grow up on lacrosse in the state of Maryland. Probably a similar thing that I saw in Long Island when I lived there for 3 years. Similarities, well, you know, they both are fast, they both have contact, and they both have a high degree of skill, skill with a stick or skill in the passing game and the kicking game and things like that in professional football, and you have contact. So, you know, I think speed, skill, and contact make for an exciting game, and they're both pretty exciting.
So you see kids around on the playground, hey, let's get a lacrosse game going here.
No question.
Wow.
They play pickup lacrosse?
Well, yeah, but I'd say more importantly, you know, when you see the 6, 7, 8 year olds out there, you know, like little stair steps each field, the kids are a little bit bigger, and you have, you know, 8, 10 fields at a high school, whatever it is, and they're, you know, they're and the field's full, so there must be, you know, 300, 400 kids out there that are, you know, 3 feet high. Well, it's that they're growing up with it, and they're going to be playing it, and you know, and if you're a kid that age, you probably want to be out there with all your friends doing it too. And I'm just saying, there's a lot more of that than our kids, you know, on a baseball diamond.
Well, Coach, we certainly appreciate it. We'll talk to you next Monday after Saturday night's game. We'll look forward to it.
Sounds good. All right, have a good weekend.
All right, there. Thanks, you go. Bill. We'll be back in just a sec. Salk and Hawley, WEEI.